So we're actually, we're looking at, last time we did not get to, we didn't get to 26, did we? The Venom Life and all that. I think we got stuck in 25.
Last time I was here, let's see. Oh yes, we discussed the twins warring in her womb, and
that's it. So I definitely want to get all the way up through 27. There's some good stuff in there. Really, the thing with 26 is kind of another interaction. We've got Abimelech, and it's just sort of like a repeat of what happened with Pharaoh. So, and of course, Abraham says again in this area, hey, you know, she's my sister. And, not Abraham, right? It's Tribby, like father, like son. And you have yet another instance of deceit. I'm going along with this. So I guess we could read through that, but again, I kind of don't really want to talk so much about 26. I really want to park in 27. There are a couple of interesting items of note in 26, so I guess I can just read it just to burn through it quickly here. Now there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. So Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, stay in the land which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. And I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and I will give to your descendants all these lands. And by your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, which of course he would be keenly aware of, wouldn't he, since he was there. All the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So Isaac lived in Gerar. When the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, she is my sister, for he was afraid to say, my wife, thinking the men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. And it came about, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out through a window, and behold, Isaac was caressing, some translations read sporting, you know, insert your own word there, his wife Rebekah. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, certainly she is your wife. How then did you say she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. Again, this gives you some indication of the state of the world at that time, right? You could even living among people with whom you're comfortable, you know, there are risks like that. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might have easily lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. So Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. Now Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him. Now all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are too powerful for us. And Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. Then Isaac dug again the wells of water which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. Notice, when there's a covenant made between two parties, on the death of one party, at least in this instance, the understanding is like, all right, deal's done, okay, we're not going to, you know, plug that up, because I made the agreement with you, and so, you know, literally all bets are off in this case.
Wow.
Let's see, and he gave them the same names which his father had given him. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of flowing water, The herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac, saying, "The water's ours." So he named the well Esek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over it too, so he named it Sitna. And he moved away from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over that, so he named it Rehoboth. For he said, "At last the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." Then he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him in the same night and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with his advisor Huzzah and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" And they said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." So we said, "Let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done you nothing but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord." Then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. And in the morning they arose early and exchanged oaths, and then Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Now it came about on the same day that Isaac's servants came in and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." So he called it Sheba, and there, therefore the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. And when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. So we see a couple of things of note here. The covenant idea, this is just sort of some cultural backdrop. When you hear of people making a covenant, for the most certainly person to person in that time, you would cut a covenant, which essentially means that you would kill an animal. And the idea is that when people eat together, there is a kind of bond that occurs between them. And so, in a sense, it's not really a sacrifice, but we are joining together, cutting this covenant. We are eating together and saying, "What nourishes you nourishes me." And so we are bound together. It's not merely a verbal agreement. So even though there's sort of feasting the night before, this is all understood to be one continuous piece. Also of note, we see that Esau is taking wives from the sort of local regions, which is not what his parents want. So that's something to keep in mind. But now let's plow through and look at 27, where the real drama begins. Now it came about when Isaac was old, his eyes were too dim to see, that he called his older son Esau and said to him, "My son." And he said, "Here I am." And Isaac said, "Behold now, I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, please take your gear, your quiver and your bow, and go out into the field and hunt game for me. And prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die." And Rebekah was listening while Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game to bring home, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Behold, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, 'Bring me some game, and prepare a savory dish for me that I may eat, and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me two choice kids from there, that I may prepare them as a savory dish for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall bring it to your father." By the way, I would love to know what a dish like that would be like. Anyway, I digress. All right. Let's see, right, "Then you shall bring it to your father that he may eat, so that he may bless you before his death." And Jacob answered his mother Rebekah, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and then I shall be as a deceiver." I mean, you are a deceiver, but "I shall be as a deceiver or a mocker in his sight," depending on your translation. "And I shall bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing." But his mother said to him, "Your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go and get them for me." So we went and got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made a savory food, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her elder son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the kids on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. This incidentally gives you an idea that it would take quite a while for this hunting and preparation anyway, right? So there's all this time for her. They've got the jump on Esau, but, you know, still a lengthy process. She also gave the savory food and the bread, which she had made, to her son Jacob. Then he came to his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" And Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Get up, please, sit and eat of my game, that you may bless me." And Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have it so quickly, my son?" And you think about all this stuff that his mother has gone through, and that's still considered quick, okay? So you're not just, it's not like in the movies, you just sort of walk out the front door and, oh, there's some game, I'll shoot it. And he said, "Because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me." It's a very interesting turn of phrase. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you really are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob came close to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." So he said, "Bring it to me and I will eat of my son's game that I may bless you." And he brought it to him and he ate. And he also brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Please come close and kiss me, my son." So he came close and kissed him, and when he smelled the smell of his garments, he blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Now may God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth, and an abundance of grain and new wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you." Now it came about, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had hardly gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. Then he also made savory food, and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." Okay, so this does not mean that Esau, Jacob is leaving the room and then Esau enters the room. Jacob leaves the room and then Esau enters the domicile to begin preparations, right? So there's still a gap. So he just gets away with this. And Isaac, his father, said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me so that I ate of it, all of it, before you came and blessed him?" "Yes, and he shall be blessed." When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." And he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing." Then he said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright," which of course last week we see didn't actually happen. "And behold, now he has taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" But Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him your master, and all his relatives I have given to him as servants. And with grain and new wine I have sustained him. Now as for you then, what can I do, my son?" And Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." So Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling, and away from the dew of heaven from above. And by your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve. But it shall come about, when you become restless, that you shall break his yoke from your neck." So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." Now, when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you." I mean, in my mental thinking, Esau's not just sort of rambling around the house saying this. He's probably saying this to his wives. There would be servants presumably around, and these servants are probably chit-chatting, and then the chit-chat goes through the grapevine and gets to his mother, right? I mean, that's, you know, that would be a common thing. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise. Flee to Haran, to my brother Laban, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him. Notice this again. We talked last time. Esau seems to be someone who's very just quick to anger, quick to anything. He doesn't think about too much down the road. He's kind of like a one-move chess player, you know. And he forgets what you did to him. Then I shall send and get you from there. Why should I be bereaved of you both in one day? And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am tired of living because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth like these from the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me? This is extremely good timing, because she can simply vocalize this as, see what Esau has done. He has taken wives from the daughters of Heth, the Hittites. I don't want that for our son. Let's send our son away to my people so that he can find him a nice young lady. And so, now, what stands out for you here?
Okay, first off, what version of the Bible are you reading?
I'm using NASB 95.
Okay, I am using New King...
What
are you using?
So we're on Genesis 28, you said? Okay,
27.
Okay, New King James Version. Okay, so you said, you pointed out on verse 20 that he said, because the Lord has caused this to happen. My version says, because the Lord your God brought it to me. Mm-hmm. And then verse 39, yours says, it shall be away from the goodness of the earth and away from, etc. Whereas mine says, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. But then it goes on to say, by your sword you shall live, which seems to be a little bit, in opposition. Does anyone else have NIV or some other version that might?
NIV.
So verse 20, why did he find the game so quickly, the end of verse 20?
The Lord your God gave me success.
Yeah.
The Lord your God gave me success.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point out those things that seem to be different. And then verse 39, where it says, when he starts the blessing. Yeah, your dwelling.
Oh, the of?
His father Isaac.
Okay, yours says away from the earth's richness and away from the dew of heaven. Okay, mm-hmm. Mine infers it'll be with. Okay.
Oh. And again, this would be an instance where the Hebrew is ambiguous and it could be either, right?
Okay. So they flipped a coin.
But the idea being that given the fact, so this would be contextual, he's saying, you will live by the sword, not this stuff.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense.
I agree.
To say that, it's by the fertility of the earth, that's where it's going to be dew of heaven.
Yeah,
that makes
no, it
no
doesn't
sense
make sense.
If you're going to be living by your sword and serving something, it makes no sense. So
I agree.
In this case, the contextual ambiguity would be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Either
good
way,
to know.
He's not happy. No.
Yeah. So what were your thoughts on verse 20 when you said, oh, God made it happen? That's an interesting point.
Oh, well, because, right, and it's one of these things where he is, because if I'm reading this as a sophist, there's enough wiggle room in the text to be able to say, well, I didn't technically say that, like, I got it. The Lord made this situation happen to me by means of my mother doing this stuff and, like, me doing it. So it happened. The Lord made this happen to me. I didn't technically say that I went out and got something in the field.
Oh.
I simply said that the Lord made this situation happen to me. But what is ironic is if we go back to chapter 25, when she inquires of the Lord, Rebekah inquires, And the Lord said to her, two nations are in her, two peoples shall be separated, and the one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. So God has actually ordained this is actually going to happen. So in a way, what he is saying is not incorrect. Right?
The intention of his heart is to deceive. He's being a freaking liar.
Deceptive, of course. But notice, even in his deception, he is still accomplishing what God has said would happen. You know, you think about, you know, and I would, this I would say would be, you know, doing dirty. You know, there you have the instance later in Egypt when the midwives just blatantly lie, you know, because people say, oh, you know, you can't lie under any circumstances. Well, this is a case where God's like, no, you lied and you protected the people, so guess what, I'm going to bless you, you know, your generations, etc. So, in this case, they are being deceptive to preserve life. He is being deceptive to get stuff.
I really struggled with it. I'm glad you brought that point up about the midwives, because that I struggled with that for a few decades, because the church I grew up in basically said it's never acceptable to lie.
Totally false.
Even if your life is on the
totally
line
false.
Or the lives
totally
of
false.
Jews hiding in your
totally.
House or anything like
totally
that,
false.
It's never acceptable to lie.
All you have to do is like,
midwives you just have to rely on God's power.
Egypt,
and then I read God bless them. Like, how could he bless them? They lied!
Yeah, because again, when we grow up with stuff that's told us that's not actually there, we often fuse the teaching from you know, the pulpit or the classroom or whatever with the text, and then suddenly we now read the text to say something that it doesn't say, right? Or in this case, the idea is when deception is used, right? It says, don't bear false witness against your neighbor. That was almost always done contextually. If I want something from you, and I want to bring up a false charge, I can't, and often this was actually used as a pretext for murder. So I have a grudge against you, so I would conjure up, I just trump up charges against you. I need a witness to confirm that so that we can put you to death. So I'd have someone bear false witness against you so that I could have you punished or killed or whatever. And so that commandment is saying, you can't do that. Right? Because the idea is that you're engaging in deception for the purpose of harming, but engaging in deception for the purpose of, say, saving life. No, that's, yeah, that's, again, you'd have to say it'd be contextual, but obviously the instance of the midwives of Egypt where they flatly lied and God flatly blessed them for that makes it very clear that, okay, you have to read stuff. There's a difference between being dishonest and, you know, just for your own personal gain or for either for your own gain or to harm someone else versus I'm actually acting in the good, you know. Otherwise, you couldn't play games with your friends that require bluffing. You know
I
mean?
Struggle
yeah.
with that. Seriously, one of my mother-in-law's favorite games is, what the heck is it called?
The Truth Is a Lie?
Well, they can't even do that one at all, but it's a weird name, like Globber Glarky or something like that, where you have to
not
come
Malarkey?
Up
with... Is it Malarkey?
I think maybe it's...
Yeah,
I'm not sure. But you have to come up with a... There's like you read the right definition, and you have to come up with a fictitious,
yeah,
silly
yeah,
one. I struggle so hard with that because I was raised, you don't lie no matter what, so...
And again, like otherwise you couldn't, for example, do any type of dramatization because every word you say in the line is a lie. It's not you,
yeah.
Right? It's like, I mean, like again, I think that's the distinction between reading something within context and also having some common sense about it. It's like, okay, I don't think that means rigidly doing that because then you couldn't even engage in play. Like with a child,
yeah.
It's like, okay, you can't engage in imaginative play because, well, that's not true. It's like, okay, I can't play Barbies with my daughter. I can't pretend that we're, you know, we're in a castle and you're a king and I, you know, or I'm a king and you're a queen and we're getting in adventures because these things aren't true.
Well, I think we have different words for that because that would be pretend, which you are... acknowledging that versus a lie, which is kind of, I'm looking at it as the opposite, like an oath. Like if somebody's making an oath or commitment or promise.
right? Yeah, then you're making a lie, and you're, do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you're pretending that it's true.
Well, no, the pretending with the children,
but with the
is
children,
different
you
than
acknowledge.
If somebody's asking you something, like under oath.
Yeah.
And so,
and, again,
and then you're lying. That's kind of like perjuring.
Yeah, and again, even in amongst Jewish scholarships, they would say that the text says, right, you say like perjuring or something like that, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. It doesn't say you can't bear false witness on behalf of your neighbor.
Right.
Which we're like, oh, that's like nitpicking. But again, the midwives absolutely bore false witness on behalf of their neighbors, and they were blessed for it. And that's part of what the Jewish scholarship would say. There's an example of bearing false witness on behalf of your neighbor, in this case, to save life. And you're obviously saving life from anybody. But again, it's like, this is why I think it's important to be hesitant and say, let's read the whole thing and see what comes out, as opposed to like, oh, look, you know, what is it? Like just these people who are hyper-literous, like,
mm-hmm.
and Judas went out and hanged himself, and then you flip and, you know, go and do that likewise. You're like, well, okay. I know people who have an almost, like, treating the text as though it is a magical spell book,
mm-hmm.
and any word that you read, like, leaps out and somehow has a kind of, you know, I don't know. And that's usually where grotesque manipulations usually for unseemly purpose to take place. Well,
yeah.
Speaking of words, definitely wanted to, I want to ask you, why doesn't Isaac just rescind this? Right? It's like, okay, clearly I have been deceived. Why not just say, oh, look, dude, look, right? You deceived me. Like, it's off. Like, I you know, it doesn't count for anything because obviously, I mean, think about it. If let's say I were giving a class or something like that, or an assignment, and I gave it to a student, and I, let's say I'm going to give each of you an individuated assignment, okay? And then you send me an email, you're like, what's my assignment? And I write back, and I'm like, oh, here's your assignment. And I realize after I send, I'm like, oh my goodness, I gave you so-and-so's assignment. Like, I made, like, it's a mistake, right? A simple error. And particularly if you came to me deceitfully, pretending to be that other person, you hacked their account, you had, like, give me my assignment because I know this person's assignment's going to be a better one, an easier one, and I give you that assignment, it makes no sense for me to say, well, oh, I guess I'm stuck with it. You think, I would just say, no. Not on the contrary, you're going to get punished for this. But here, something is very different, and this, I think, is an insight into the extreme gravity with which these kinds of blessings are given. There is a sense or an understanding here that when you invoke words in this particular way, they cannot be undone. And it doesn't matter, like, which is part of the reason why he's being so careful about, are you really the person? And you think about, even, you know, today in the legal context, there are many circumstances where you have to be very, very careful about certain types of verification, because once the thing is stamped, at least until you have gone through a lot of hoops, that thing is, it is what it is. It is, it's the law. And I think that there is something, we often read that and we think that's so crazy or it's so terrible or something, but maybe that is a commentary on our own loosey-goosey, careless treatment of words, just generally. And I think, you know, maybe to this point of being honest or dishonest, it tells us that we should take language and words a lot more seriously than we do. And it certainly gives, you see this in numerous stories of the ancient world where, let's say, a king gives an edict, for example, right? In the case of Esther, the king gives the edict, and it's like, I have said it. It is my word. It cannot be undone. Now I can create an out where your people can defend themselves, but once I put my seal to this, it is absolutely written into the fabric of the cosmos. It cannot be undone. And so that is the reason why, in this case, Isaac doesn't take it back, because he can't take it back. It's irrevocable. And so you see him here, when he gives the blessing, I mean, you realize he is clearly not happy with this. I mean, Isaac is not pleased any more than Esau is not pleased. And so he gives him an out. Yes, what I've said is done. It is done. But I will give you a blessing that at least allows you to get out from under that. Right? You'll be able to, when the time is has come, you will throw off his yoke and you, like, you'll be able to do your own thing. When you become restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. And as we see, Esau actually does, and Esau himself becomes exceedingly wealthy. I think that to me is one of the most powerful things in there, that when scripture is talking about covenants and oaths and blessings and things like that, these aren't just nice things that are said, like, oh, God bless you. When they're saying this, they're understanding that my words have a one-to-one relationship with reality, and they can't just be undone, even if deception is used. If deception is used, let's say, and you were to shoot at someone in the dark, thinking that it was a criminal, and it turned out to be a friend, you can't take that bullet back. Like, it's out of the barrel. It's like, you can't take it back. And that is the way in which they're understanding this. Once that word is spoken, you can't take it back. Yeah.
I also find it interesting that by God's providence, he didn't, out of suspicion, say, may Esau be blessed. He could have said, God give Esau of the dew of heavens,
yes,
and the fat of the other. He just said, you, let the people serve you, the nations bow to you, be master over your brothers.
Yes. Yeah.
He could have said, Esau, be master over his brothers. Like,
yes.
Did Noah that blesses his sons? One of them blesses his sons. It was with the whole Canaan.
When he curses, right,
Ham,
Canaan. Right,
yes,
right,
yes.
He, right,
specifically,
so he
gives
name. Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And in this time he does not.
Yes. And again, if we're taking seriously, believe this stuff, so I take this seriously. If God has already told his mother that, the younger one is going to be ruling over the older one, then we can assume that God is going to work it, and God is perfectly comfortable working through deception on the part of humans to accomplish his purposes. Again, we think, oh, God, you shouldn't do that. Okay, are you going to say that to God? Right? Like, it's kind of God's world. God can do this. And two, you get the sense, I think a lot of times people gloss over that part and they're thinking, oh, man, she's playing the favorite and she's being deceptive and, like, she's completely violating the custom and all this other stuff. But she is actually doing, think about it, before these two were even born, that's been in her head, that the younger is eventually going to be ruling over the younger will rule over the elder, the elder will serve the younger. That's in her head the whole time. Their entire lives, that's in her head. So this is not merely some kind of conniving to, just have a favorite.
I guess the question would be, did Rebecca really need to help out God?
Right.
Because the Lord already said that word, and then Isaac had already, on his own accord, made this promise with his brother over the food.
True, but his father wouldn't know that.
No, but I'm just saying, I think for us, like, if God's given us what God said, and sometimes we want to get in there and, like, oh, well, this is what's supposed to happen, so let me just help God out and let me make sure this happens. you know.
Yeah, I mean,
even if it's deceit.
But sometimes, I mean, think about it. Something like with the flood, how, like, it is through human agency that the purposes of God, for the most part, I mean, obviously you have miraculous things that drop down from heaven and things
right.
like that. But it is through humans that, I mean, we have the scriptures because humans wrote the stuff down.
Well, yeah, and Noah was told to build
yep,
the ark,
yep, yep.
told how to build.
Yep.
But
and
the
no
question is,
hear,
was
yeah,
Rebecca
not,
told to,
yeah.
to
right.
see?
Yeah. And
that
it,
was...
And I would say here, she's just simply doing her thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like, oh, what you're doing is like totally wrong, but what you're doing is actually putting into play, because I'm thinking you have literally the span of a few hours. What's God going to do? Like, well, Esau's going to run, he tripped, he fell down and died, and so now he can't, like, I
we
can't actually see any other way in which it could happen. Like, somebody, well, I ran, I tripped, whoops. I fell, and then my brother accidentally. It's like, what's that movie scene where the guy trips? I think it's like a Mr. Bean film or something. Like, he trips, he literally falls, and the crown goes on his head. And like, what do we do? Like, he's the actual king now. I don't know.
Okay.
Good question.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I wanted to bring up the point. Last week, you anticipated this chapter and said the difference between a blessing and the birthright.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that?
So birthright, I think I mentioned it last, yeah I did, but I can retouch on that. So the birthright is a sort of this worldly, this plane status symbol. Okay, so my birthright entitles me to legal rights, social rights, status rights, property rights, all this stuff that is the sort of, as I relate outward this way to my fellow human beings in my family, that's the birthright. The birthright is what gives me status in my family, in my community, in amongst my peers. Blessing is a vertical piece. That is the way in which God and I relate each other to each other. Now, the two clearly overlap. So the blessing would have implication for the way in which the birthright is employed, but the blessing is something that transcends this world. The birthright is strictly a this worldly social kind of thing. If you want to think about it.
I get it. It's like what you inherited from your last will and testament. So why
right.
do they decide to proclaim a blessing on God's behalf as though God can't speak for himself?
What's that?
Why do they proclaim a blessing on God's behalf as though God cannot speak for himself?
Oh, because in this case, in the same way that I am able to pray for you that has nothing to do with you, I don't need your permission to pray for you and ask God's blessing.
Right, but as the mother of two children, like, why am I only allowed to give God's mm-hmm. blessing to one of them because they happen to be born first, in this case, minutes, and then, oh,
you're
my
not.
Son, I'm sorry, you're screwed, no. you weren't here first.
No, you're like, not. In this case, because the way in which the blessings in this case are tied to the birthright, so if you are the firstborn, you get the birthright, so you automatically get double portion amongst everybody else, you will have a unique blessing. So everybody's getting sort of their own unique blessing. My sense is that Isaac goes way over the top on his blessing and just says, you know what, I'm just going to like throw everything at you. And not realizing that, oh wow, I haven't really left anything behind. So the blessing in this case is attaching the this worldly component to the divine realm. And again, it's like you're some of this is an ancient way of thinking that we wouldn't really think now, because we would say, well, now we're in Christ, so all of us automatically have the birthright and we have the blessing and we have the whole thing. But in that culture, it wasn't understood that way. There were people who were blessed more by God and were understand that's perfectly okay. Like, there isn't equality in the eyes of God. Like, some people are blessed more, and some people are blessed less, and that's perfectly okay.
Well, we still recognize that.
Sure.
Like, birthright is like law. It's like our expectation, but the blessing is God's provision. So, like, we even was, if my parents passed away, and I grew up with them, I have an inheritance, and I find out my father's got other children. Right? They are entitled to stuff according to their birthright, but the degree to what they're entitled to is dependent upon how much they're a connection they're able to make, whether they're a half child, do they get everything based on my mother's side also, if they're not related to my, you know what I mean?
I do, so, but the blessing here infers, like, I'm bestowing God's gifts to you, and
he's not saying that. He's saying may. And the birthright is, I am actually giving you this. The blessing is, may God give you this also. Right? So he's saying may. He's not saying God is going to do X, Y, and Z. Only God is able to speak for God's self in that
right.
He is simply saying, by virtue of my ability to bless you as a human, right? We do have the ability to bless each other. It doesn't necessarily mean God is going to participate in that. But the understanding is, because God has given me this promise, when I make a blessing to my own children, God is probably going to make good on that. So he's simply saying, may God bless you, just as I might save any of you. May God bless you.
Yeah.
You know, may God keep you, all that stuff.
I used to think this passage was incredibly unfair and annoying, but then you get to the part where Jacob meets Esau again later in life, and God has abundantly blessed Esau
and made it right.
So it's like, no matter how foolish we are as humans, God still is sovereign, and he will make it right, and he is just a just God.
Yeah, and as the blessing says, you will be able to get out from under this, right? Your starting position is going to be at a deficit. Mm-hmm. But the blessing means you don't have to stand at the starting point. Like, I can't give you the stuff. He's going to get all the money. I can't give you the money, but I can give you a blessing that allows you to get out of it. You're still part of this lineage, right? God says it's to all of your children, to Abraham, and that includes Esau. So it's like, he's still going to be blessed. Well, we're unfortunately out of time. Let's get out of here. I'll pray us out quickly, dear Lord. Thank you for this day. Thank you for my brothers and sisters. I would ask especially to be with Grandma Joan. Help her to get to feeling better and back in our midst. Ask that you be with us in the coming days and weeks, and let us do all things to your glory. In the name of your Son, Christ, we pray. Amen.
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 All right. So next week is 28?
Yes.
Because I can.
Yep. Woo. I'm not sure if we can get through that puppy.
Oh, you want to take it back?
I'll take it back.
Thank you.
You brought them. I'll take them back.
Thank you.
I can get them if you'd like.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
I don't even need to walk.
All right. Let's see.